Hi everyone, welcome to Matrix Moments. Today is a very special episode. We are shooting this in Vedantu's office. I have the pleasure of welcoming two OGs of EdTech in India, Vamsi, founder of Vedantu, and Mayank, founder of UpGrad. These guys pretty much actually started the EdTech revolution. I've known you guys for a while. I guess you both have known each other for even longer.
Yeah, about 17 years.
Wow. I'm sure there are stories about each of you that we would love to hear. So thank you guys for doing this. Really appreciate it, especially as EdTech's going through lots of churn, lots of boom over the last few years. So we'll talk about that. But before we get into that, maybe Vamsi, to start with you. You started as a teacher, then pretty much started the EdTech revolution in 2014, right? You started Vedantu. So talk us through a little bit of your journey. What led you to start Vedantu, and then what's gone?
Yeah, it's been a long journey. Mm. The journey began way back in 2006. Mm. And in fact, very almost like a deja vu moment, because coming to think of it, as a teacher, when we started in 2006, before that, our ideas were around e-commerce and something what these days this Instacarts and the Blinkits are doing. So it was sort of like a deja vu moment that, it takes like 15 years for that idea to take shape. But anyways, jokes apart, this was, we're all 2005 grads. In 2006, we wanted to do something together. Education was not really still as an idea. It happened as accident. We went into a very small place, trying to figure out what to do. And we were working on a few ideas, and something stuck. We went to a few schools. Some of the kids came to us for mentoring. We taught them, and it just felt, great doing. And there was energy there. So that's really how it started. It started off in a very small place called Barnala in Punjab. We're teaching some 36 odd kids.
Wow.
And out of these kids, 11 of them ended up in the top 5 colleges of the country. And that gave us confidence. We were at 21, 22 at that time. So that gave us confidence. And yeah, there's no looking back. We ran an offline business called Laksh for 6-7 years, mm-hmm. from that 2006 to almost 2012. Then the idea of Vedantu as a technology endeavor started coming to us in 2011. Because around 2010 and 11, we expanded Laksh from one location to sort of like 4-5 locations. And that's, Rajat, when really we found the challenges around scaling an offline setup, right? I'm sure all of us, witnessed that. But this was a time when we were trying to get some good teachers and set up these places in tier 3, tier 4 locations. And we realized that it will take a long time for us to do that. Retention of these teachers in these small places was a big issue. So at that time, we thought that how can technology be used to help scale faster and better? Incidentally, this was a time when Flipkarts of the country were also coming up, but that was also an inspiration. That can technology, is there a play in technology? So one of the co-founders, we released him, Freedom, and he came to Bangalore with few of his juniors from his college and started doing few stuff. And after 9 months, we realized that we can't do both. We have to focus on one. That was a big turning point, big choice. And we decided that if impact at scale is the goal, this is what we need to do. And that's when Vedantu as a idea came. Then sold the first venture to a listed company, MT Educare, based out of Mumbai, and served in the transition for 2 years. And 2014 is when we came and started this concept of live classes. Live classes for us was pretty natural because we were teachers, we did teaching, and that is what gave us success at Laksh. So rather than following an asynchronous mode of delivery, we said that if we want to replicate that experience and create a scalable model of that, the design choice has to be something related with that. So live classes was a very natural choice, and very initial days, challenging initial days. No 4G, forget 4G, 3G was patchy, 2G was there. So build a very bare bones platform for doing one-on-one, did that for almost like two and a half years, then did one to few and then one to many. One to many was a big change because that got the unit economics working, price down, incentive for the teachers increased, so the quality of the teachers we could bring on the system increased. And then there's been like a real boom, right? And then after that, since 2017 onwards, it has grown leaps and bounds. COVID happened, so that even further like took it off, and great to see a category getting, you know, created through that. And and fundamentally at a student level, what all of this has done is got the price point down for the similar quality, you know, teaching from what an offline would charge at roughly around like 150 or 200 bucks per hour to today we offering like around 60 to 70 bucks per hour. And with more technology, like something like recently we launched around AI Live, that even has like we could just get it down to 10. So I'm pretty excited with more innovations like this and more disruptions where quality teaching can really reach to masses. So in summary,
that's wonderful, and we'll come back to some of that. Mayank, over to you. You started life as in the edtech or education space as a consultant, then a VC, and started around the same time, I guess,
15 March. So Vamsi started, and then I said, look, let me also start. I think for me, my journey is like not that interesting. I did everything that textbook tells you to do. Everybody said consulting is a fad, so I did consulting. Then they said you should invest for a little bit. I did investing. And in the journey, I just realized that before upgrad, the only thing that I had done was education. So for good or bad, I just could not do anything else. So there was no other option. When everybody said do entrepreneurial journey, I had no option but to take up education. So it was not like a fully sort of thought through plan. But
I am following in your footsteps.
Yeah, I guess, consultant. I mean, my take is that maybe now is the time. Now is the right time.
I didn't mention this. So Mayank had a huge role to play. So when I was doing Laksh, he was, education consultant. He used to come with all the gyan that, you know what, yahan ye ho raha hai, Brazil mein ye ho raha hai. And I was like literally like, you know, frog in a small wall. So he has a big role to play.
He was telling me like 3G nahi chalta hai, 4G nahi chalta hai. And I was telling him, dekhiye, Brazil mein ye ho raha hai. And he said, come on, boss. No. Let's talk real topics right now. So my journey was mostly, I mean, I started my journey as an advisor, helping companies in education grow, scale. Got a good understanding. We started in India, but at that point of time, there were no education companies at scale in the country. So most of my work ended up being in Brazil, LATAM, China, Middle East, Southeast Asia. So worked a lot of larger education companies at that point in time. And that gave me some understanding, but it was always on the other side of the table that you were doing some work, you were diligencing, but you were not actually doing anything. So to do, I had to cross the bridge. Yeah. And I thought the next bridge is perhaps put some money, there's some skin in the game. And then I realized it's not my money. Mm. And then I realized maybe that's also not that interesting. But in all fairness and honesty, I think that time when I was looking at the education sector, and that's the time when Vamsi also sort of started his journey, around 2014-15, when I looked at the entire landscape, there were not too many great education companies that were in existence at that point of time. And everybody was looking at education problem as a sales and marketing problem. And nobody was thinking from a learner first perspective, and there were opportunities available. So at that point of time, my personal take of looking at education was that, look, education was seen as content library. If you don't have access to content, you get access to content. But nobody was thinking of teaching, and that's where the thought process of upgrade came into incubation, partly looking at what was happening outside and partly the itch that, look, if you cannot invest somebody else's money and you're still finding struggles in doing that, why not start off of your own? But actually the tipping point for me came in as part of one of the diligences when you were looking at one of the companies. This was, again, outskirts of Delhi, Greater Noida. And apparently there's a joke that if you throw a stone, you hit a engineering school. There are so many engineering colleges there. So one of the engineering colleges we went in, building was completely empty. You went up to the second floor. Three or four kids were sitting and studying. And there were no teachers. And what Vamsi said, that the quality of education was questionable. So I asked them, what are you guys doing here? And the answer was, look, we come, we go. Teachers sometimes come and they don't. And I laughed, like many of, whenever I tell this story, everybody laughs at that point. And that's the time it struck me that, look, if that's the quality of education, and we keep on talking about all these things, but if all my, I mean, I come from a highly subsidized, privileged education background. I mean, my full education was sponsored by the government in many ways. And if knowing all about education, if I could not, I mean, I could not laugh about it.
Yeah.
So I had to do something about it. And that's where taking inspiration from him and knowing what was there, that's where that journey started.
Super. So, guys, coming to, you know, we are at a very weird point from an edtech perspective, right? So it was a slow start, 15 to 18, maybe 17. Then suddenly this boom came, accelerated by COVID. to now, if you talk to people in the industry, people are saying, boss, it's a bust. So what's your view? As in, is this a bust? Is it a correction? Or what's going on?
Actually, even at the start of this conversation that somebody said it's a bust, that tech market is gone. And my answer is that, look, edtech market is there. It's even bigger today.
Yeah.
Perhaps the valuation is questionable. Perhaps the way in which we are chasing growth is questionable. But the market exists. There is a customer set who needs to be educated.
Yeah.
Online provides a great medium. As Vamsi said, it provides the right cost structure, right quality, right access to the best faculty members coming in. I have zero questions about the market. I have a question mark on people who are quoting this are not in the ecosystem.
Yeah.
So once they are in the ecosystem, they will realize that there's significant value addition that you're doing. Yes, perhaps the growth that many of us were chasing was not the right way of chasing growth, and we need to course correct ourselves. But is there an impact? Yes. Is there a customer need? Yes. Are you serving the customer need in the right manner? Absolutely, yes. So I don't see it's a bust or a boom condition. I mean, this is a part of phase of the journey. You have to go through this. Get your model right. Market absolutely is there. You need to just find the right way of scaling up in this market.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, just can't agree more. See, let's just look at from first principles, right? What Mayank just said is very first principle thinking. See, one thing if I've realized about human life is it always goes towards better efficiency. Having run an offline business for almost like, what, 7-8 years, it's inefficient, right? It's inefficient from multiple perspectives, right? Forget quality. In the cost structures you have on the rent, the cost structures on all these components, you are essentially charging that to the customer, in this case, the student. Online fundamentally, you know, takes all that.
Yeah.
And that is why it's able to place it at a lower cost. That's one. Second, in an offline, you are restricted to a 4 or 5 kilometer geography around your house, and especially in Kateville, right, more so, wherein even the travel stuff is, you know, restrictions are there. And in order to provide that kind of a quality, if you are in a metro or a top tier, you might still be lucky. You might have an access to a nearby teacher. But what about the majority, 70-80% of the folks out there? There is no way they have access to such a high quality teacher or teaching at that cost.
Yeah.
And then I'm not even talking about convenience and all those aspects. So I think from a first principle perspective, it's inevitable. Coming to that question on bust and all, it's all relative, right? So, you know, all of us have portfolios, we have invested in stock market, and stock market also have gone down. Is this the time wherein you would exit from your portfolios? Of course not, right? You'll allow the compounding to take its impact because you'll believe in the long-term story.
Yeah.
It's similar here. Just look at the numbers, right? 300 million kids just in Kateville alone. Out of that, around 85-90 million have access to internet. Out of that, all the online education companies combined would be less than 5% penetrated today. These are very similar numbers, by the way, of internet e-commerce in India, way back in 2014 times. Now it's double digit, like probably 15 plus something. Same thing will happen here. You just need to stay in the game and just continue to, as Mayank said, continue to obsess over the learning outcomes and give what is the best and what is right for the student. If you actually compare with the huge 8x, 9x kind of a growth spurts we saw in COVID times, the current growth rates going to be relatively smaller as compared to that. Now, if you choose to call that as a bust, then, I mean, you can call that as a bust. But let me also tell you, Rajat, even before, and you know this, even before COVID, EdTech, and I can talk about Vedantu's numbers, we were growing at an average around 2x to 2.5x year on year, right? Which isn't bad, right? COVID obviously accelerated it to like maybe a 5x, 6x numbers. If that is coming back to a 2x or like, you know, plus 50%, that's an amazing growth rate.
Yeah.
You just need to be there, and great companies would evolve out of it because 95% of the market is still out there. There is no way for, in a country like India, in such a diverse country like India, without using technology, you can solve this problem of providing quality teaching to these, you know, all the students across the country. So, in fact, I would go on and say that these are the times when the right models and the right companies would further emerge as winners because there is no noise. Noise will be reduced. Whatever consolidation had to happen has happened, right? And the ones who are actually just stay put, focus on the fundamentals, will actually come out very stronger at the other side of it. So I would say, in fact, it's a huge opportunity. And the right people will take advantage of.
No, couldn't agree more, Vamsi and Mayank. I think, at least from even from our perspective, we continue to be excited. I think it's a little bit of a frame of reference situation, right? Where if you, as you were saying, that if you think that the COVID growth rates will continue, obviously that's not going to happen. But the market is there.
Yeah.
If you can figure out a right economic model to serve, I think large companies will get created. In education itself, one of the largest industries in the country, correct, from a services perspective. Yeah. So there's no reason why it can't be disrupted by online if the cost to serve, quality, etc., can be maintained. So absolutely agree with you guys. But you know, let's get down into, you know, obviously there are issues that people need to deal with, right? Like for example, the sectors always had this CAC issue, right? Where it's not going away anytime soon. So what can people do, right? New founders, or what are you guys doing to, you know, figure that out?
Yeah.
So it was not that it was always an issue. I would say in COVID, and say rightfully so, because in COVID times, all the parents were there. Schools were shut for a large part of time. They were in that mental frame of mind. They were ready for to be, you know, the shown this, and that is why it was imperative at that time to go out there and expose to as many students and parents as possible these services. And hence at that time you essentially think of it from a land grab perspective, and there if you are not aggressive at that time, when else would you be aggressive, right? So many players confuse that with saying that this is the way to acquire customers, wherein that is just a mode you were in.
Sure.
And it's important to recognize those modes. I think the mode at that time is different, at this time needs to be different, and you need to be adaptable enough to change that mode. That's how at least, you know, we think about it. So around that time, if you are also focused on doing it in exactly that way, you will also miss on a big opportunity, right? But having said that, there are a lot of, I would say, for lack of a better word, organic channels. Think of these as assets, right, which you can create as a company, which will continue to give you user acquisition or, you know, user coming to you, even in the absence of your paid channels. And the way to, probably on a framework to think about it is, which of your channels or assets will continue to give you students, even if you don't spend a single rupee on it. For example, way back in 2016 or 17, we saw that kids are searching for solution to, say, NCERT books and all that. So we put that content out and started optimizing for SEO. It took some time, 2 years, 2.5 years, but that then gives a very ready, steady kind of a traffic, which goes up and down with seasons. But even if I don't spend any money on marketing, it still comes.
Yeah.
Although a lot of it is generic, and you need to figure out which of that traffic is relevant, which is not, and you can figure that out through various models. But that is just one example. The other example can be little bit of YouTube, and there are other examples, like, you know, there are many examples like this. So the way to balance this is that, yes, to get some user, you know, with to you, you might have to initially start spending, and initially that model won't work. But you need to do that, because if you don't have kids coming to you, or students coming to you, and if they don't experience you, the word of mouth won't even kick in. So there is a critical mass required.
Yeah.
So that is one equation. But only depending on that is also something which might not serve, unless and until your like word of mouth and all those things are like perfectly set, that this critical mass is enough now for getting you growth. So that's one. The other thing you can go do is, like, think of creating this as assets. Like assets means technology or tech-led or product-led top of the funnels, which will continue to give you students or a stream of students or parents, right? Which you don't need to really spend on. That might require initial investment. And that is what you need to judge, depending on the capital available to you, how much you want to invest. Brand is also one part of it.
Yeah.
So if you think of brand, brand is also a part of it. Mm. And because if you invest in brand, you don't have to do it every month, right?
Correct.
It gives you something. So it's a combination, it's a balance of this. And if you do this balance right, then you have suddenly a particular equation in which your customer acquisition cost and that, you know, sort of works out. Mm. In this, the basic assumption, Rajat, I still want to reiterate this, is your experience is there, right? That is super critical.
Correct.
If that isn't there, all this doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's a big disclaimer in that.
Yeah, either churn will happen or word of mouth, as you said, won't even start.
In fact, it's even uglier than that. Unfortunately, in education, everything is a cycle. And Mayank's case, it's even larger cycles, right? And if you do a bad job, you won't really have that impact in your initial customer acquisition.
Sure.
Because the word of mouth hitting also takes time. So it works both ways. If you are very good, even then it doesn't really, it's not reflecting in your initial cohorts. If it's bad also, it won't reflect. But once you take 2 years or 4 years in Mayank's case, then that effect takes shaping. So if you do a bad job, then there is no way to get out of that loop. But if you do a great job, then actually that has a disproportionate returns coming to you. So experience, in fact, has a compounding impact on this whole customer acquisition cost and the funnel.
I come from similar school, but slightly different. My first thing was increase ARPU. At least make your product such that people realize that there is value that one needs to pay. Because, look, in this market, there is that much that you can charge, and there's that much that you have to pay for customer acquisition. Yeah. So if you can't, let's say, first of all, can't control the cost of acquisition, at least increase the gross margins and what you're collecting every learner, because that's the first thing that you can start. Build a product, and that requires, from a DNA perspective, not just what's the value prop that the customers need, but also how you innovate on the product. If you have a certain product, can I add this feature? Can I make it more sort of credible? Can I make, just for the argument's sake, can I make online tutoring into a school education? And how do I sort of expand on that sort of ARPU level? There are ways and means in which you will constantly innovate and create a higher ARPU. The second thing is, if, let's say, you have a higher ARPU, so you have to also realize that there are two landlords in online world who are charging highest rent possible out there. But there are about 100 millions of landlords across offline, and you will see a move towards getting to offline to attract customers, because the cost of real estate may not be as expensive as the cost of online real estate, which is
Google,
completely
Facebook,
monopolized. Sure. And you can get more fragmented sort of real estate available, which is cheaper. And you build some credibility, specifically in tier 2, tier 3 market, where people want to see you. They just don't. I mean, I was talking to somebody in Lucknow who was running our operations in that city. And they were saying, OK, I do need a physical center. Unless people come in and see me, I will not have a conversation about it. So that's the second bit, which is offline will come and play an important role. The third one, which Vamsi said, that you have to build certain assets. The challenge in assets, specifically when it comes to education, is that when it comes to examination time, education is a daily event. When you're preparing for competitive examination, a daily event. In higher education, working professional, it's not a daily event. You don't get up in the morning and say, today I want to learn Python. I mean, it's not news article, it's not a toothbrush activity.
Triggers will be very different.
Very different triggers, and you have to play on those triggers at the right time or create that need. It's challenging in higher education as much. I mean, relatively speaking, during examination time in K-12 compared to examination, it works out because you want to get up and check last year question paper, this year question paper. So creating an asset is critical, but you just need to be very careful about where you are creating an asset. So it's a daily need, not a once in a blue moon kind of a need. And then lastly, for us, about 40-45% of our revenue comes from repeats and referral. So there will be the experience matters. If the experience is bad, you are completely gone. I mean, you're down to the dogs. Because if you have, let's say, the land grab that Vamsi said, everybody got some land. Now your goal is that whatever that you can generate, part of the revenue will come from this only. And for that, you need to just give a kick-ass job in making sure that they are happy, they are satisfied. And you need to focus on the right metric to measure. Like sometimes we measure NPS. I love NPS, but I have a problem with NPS also. Because NPS is like you're going to a massage and you are getting the massage. You're asking, how's the rating? Oh, I'm very liking it. And then 15 days later, you say, okay, no, the massage is still hurting me here. So NPS is a measure of the experience at that point of time. But the real outcome is what leads to repeats and referrals. And therefore, that focusing on the right metric, what is the experience that you want to give? I can give a very easy examination and get the NPS higher. But if the guy cannot clear the interview preparation, then what's the point of giving a great experience? So it's a massage analogy that you need to sort of keep in mind when you're working on this. But these four things between ARPU, offline, online, getting your asset right, and experience that leads to get people back in, could play an important role in bringing the CAC down.
Awesome. I remember a long time back you told me less than 20,000 rupees, yeah.
Don't even bother. With inflation, yeah. Yeah. With the infinite supply of money, now it's 40,000, but still don't even bother.
That supply is gone.
No, on the lighter note, when people said, when people, yeah, 20 years later will say, what, yeah, did you guys do during the infinite capital thing? Many will answer that we were just selling and buying some pictures of apes. And that world will change and we'll say, what useful thing you did at that point in time.
Awesome. But picking this online offline thing, both of you would have tried or thought about it. So what's the current thinking?
So for us, we have two segments, college learners and working professionals. So for working professionals, offline may not necessarily be the most sort of critical area. But for college learners who are currently in the colleges or looking for the college admission, offline does play an important role. I'm talking, let's say we have a large study abroad business line. For study abroad, when parents are coming, they have to sit someplace. They can't just watch in Zoom and say, okay, I'm going to put in 10 lakh, 15 lakh, 20 lakh rupees for that education. So how do you create a great offline experience for credibility? It may sometimes not lead top of the funnel, but whatever is the mid funnel, bottom of the funnel, conversions become easier.
Sure.
Because there's trust factor built in. And that's mostly for tier two, a different strata, lower ARPU sort of customers. And if you create those presence, you are visible. We are spending about 6-7 hours on the phone, but the remaining 8 hours is sleeping and the remaining 7-8 hours is like physical moving around in the environment. How you capture those on those physical moving around environment where people can come, get those trust, convert. I don't see from a learning experience perspective, offline will add a lot. It will add more complexity to scaling. But from an acquisition perspective, it definitely adds credibility.
Sure. Yeah. And Vamsi, any different thoughts from you?
No, I think we are still early in our own exploration. Early in the sense that having operated an offline, I do see they're different. So there is some value add there, especially to Mayank's point, the customer acquisition and brand perception, right? Forget offline, Rajat. Interesting thing I'll tell you, the moment we started giving physical books, that itself had an impact on brand and satisfaction. Yeah, yeah. And no, I don't know what you want to call it, right? But it was some offline component. So, I mean, we have this psychology probably that, you know, when you get something, it's real. In an online, however we have evolved, it still feels like, you know, it's in the air.
Goods kind of.
Yeah, goods services. So I know, having operated that for 8 years, I do see value there. What we are figuring out, what we're trying to figure out is for which target group is it more valuable? At the end of the day, the way we think about it is we have extreme student like centricity as our core value. Like, so we think outside in these things. So if today we are at a 4.5% penetration, what will lead this to a 10%? And if offline has a component to play in that, that's how we are thinking about it. And the answer is surprisingly yes.
Okay.
There are certain pockets in the country. If we just continue with online, it will take certain time for them to convert, trust and adapt. And it's as simple as trust, because a parent sometimes feel in these areas that kid, if he's studying online in home, he is not paying attention.
Sure.
Just because of lack of some supervision, physical supervision. If you just do the same thing, maybe in a physical center, they have a innate psychological feeling that bacha pad raha hai.
Yeah.
Right. So these things, right, you know, a lot of these things are factors in which we are exploring, that which tier, which age group, and these are the stuff we are exploring.
Yeah.
And we are doing experiments.
So what I'm hearing from both of you is offline is more of a market penetration thought process for both of you. But how would you choose that over, say, going international, right? Lots of edtechs are going international. You've gone international. So would you choose one over the other or do both?
No, so
or?
I think do both. But I also mentioned, because Ramsi said that, look, this is an early penetration level. Whenever the penetration increases in a market, you always get to the chasm, right? And you have to take a jump.
Yeah.
That jump could be massive brand building. That jump could be giving out free refunds without even looking cash on delivery. I mean, there are these jumps and innovation that needs to bring in. And for education, I think offline will be that one jump.
Yeah.
You may not teach there.
Yeah.
You may just have a center which people will come to. And that will have an impact of how the conversion will happen. But for us, international was more a natural extension because, look, it's a it's a delivery of services, right? It's not a product delivery.
Sure.
I'm not sort of
shipping goods
and logistics and supply chain management of that. I have great faculty members who can teach here, who can teach globally, and I work with international universities, which I can take to international markets. It is easier said than done because it looks very simple, right? Because you have all the infrastructure. We started with Indian diaspora because that's one place where we got the initial set of sort of adoption. But cracking, again, the customer acquisition is very different from country A to country B to country C. So while I can say I have hundreds of products, let me go to country A and launch it. Actually, the approach for us is that there's a product A for country A, product B for country B, and product C for country B, rather than all the products getting launched there, because it's just figuring out the customer persona, who's the customer, how will we reach out to that place. So for us, international is a natural extension rather than a forced extension, but it's not as easy as it looks out to be. It requires a bit of thought process as to where you want to penetrate.
And go-to-market is also different, product
very different, and very different, 100% different. In one place, for example, I just give you an example that, I mean, we're trying something in Singapore, but Singapore has a massive government subsidy. The government subsidy reduced from 90% to 80%, the demand drops.
Wow.
And you have to launch program which has got government subsidy. While if you go to the US, you can't compete with the high ARPU programs because there are many sort of great high ARPU programs. So you have to come and leverage your cost of delivery to bring the price down to attack a market from a different angle. So every market has its own set of nuances, but you just need to know those local nuances. You can't do it by being here in India.
Yeah, no, makes sense. Vamsi, you've largely been a live business, right? Live class format business. Now you mentioned that you've also launched an AI tutor. So talk a little bit about how you've made those choices, and what's going to scale further for you.
Yeah, no. So so very apt question. So how we think about this is student centricity being our core value. We actually don't believe that we are a live product. It's naturally tended out in that way. We are actually a student first company. So what we think about in all these cases, Rajat, is we keep the student at the center and try to figure out that which design would be best suited for that particular age group, right? And then try to go about designing the solution. Invariably, it did happen that if we want to stay strong on learning outcomes, this was the most apt design as a primary source.
Yep.
Having said that, we have a massive post-class support using recorded videos, which is massive actually, right? You know, I think we would have like thousands and thousands of hours of recorded content, which is also used. Apart from that, practice, adaptive practices, worksheets, tests. So all this, it's an entire learning journey. What you see at the start as a hero is obviously the live model, because the teacher is there and it's sort of naturally becomes the hero product. But if you really go in deep and ask me what results in learning outcome, I would say it's a combination of all these things woven together well, which really creates a learning outcome. If only live classes you do, we would not have been able to achieve that kind of a learning outcome. So having said that, AI Live was another attempt in the direction of how do we reduce the price point. And impact at scale has always been the goal. So we're always constantly trying to see how do we reduce the price point for two reasons. One is the sales model disruption is something which I believe with online education taking more brand and people getting aware about it, what we have seen also happening in China is it becomes a commoditized product, right? So you don't really require a hardcore sales push because the brand is taking shape, because the trust is taking shape, and also price has an impact. As Mayank said, if you actually design a high ARPU product, the sales and marketing also has to be woven around it.
Correct.
And that's the right way to do it. So that is one direction which from where we started actually. So if you look at the journey of Vedantu in 2014-15, that was the only model we had. From there, we are constantly testing limits on saying that do we create a product with enough brand established out there that it can be auto-consumed. So we call it auto sales. And what we saw is for any product beyond, let's say 20,000, as Mayank was saying, you do require that kind of intervention, assistance, mentoring, counseling, something. The moment we go below that, it's very interesting things starts happening. So the challenge for us is like, how do we design a product which still has a 50% plus contribution margins on delivery, yet can we price lower? So this has been going on for 2 years. We were looking at every component of a class and where the cost goes and where it doesn't. We figured out there are four broad components. One is that main teacher teaching. Then after teaching, he asks some doubts. Then the third thing is he tests those concepts using some quizzes, blah, blah. And then there's a motivation angle to it. These are basically at a very broad level, the four things which goes. So we then decided that which components of this can be productized or automated or tech enabled. And we came out with a combination, tested it out for almost like 8-9 months on free users and then paid students. When we started seeing the ratings and the engagement scores similar, that's when we went out. And this is interesting, it's very early, but we've been able to disrupt price points by 1/3 to 1/4. So what we were offering for 25K, you know, offering at like around 7K to 8K with the same, like everything. So the whole year, one year course, all subjects is available now for 8K.
Wow. Right?
So, and that is auto-consumed. Is the experience there? I would say it's 10% deviation from the probably a pure live class. But yeah, using more technology, we probably would be there. So I think this is another direction of work.
Wherein, this has no sales team.
Absolutely zero. Wow. Right. So as Mayank was saying, it's exactly that, right? What he was saying, that you essentially go to this level, and from there now, in order to get to mainstream, there's a chasm, and you have to jump over it. And there are various things you need to do in order to jump. So when we spoke to our 95% of the users who don't convert, what they said is two things, right? Price and the internet device. Internet device, we can't do much. Offline is one thing which you can do, and that is where, like, you know, that's another direction. Other is price point. This is all the, you know, the ways we are thinking about, like, you know,
very
trying
good.
To solve for this.
Very good. Let me ask you on that product note, actually, to both of you. You know, it's great if you have both product and distribution for great businesses. But if you were to start today, what would you build first? Or what would you focus more on?
So product first. So many great businesses die because they don't have distribution. But no great business can be formed if you don't have great product. So I guess, I mean, product is important. You have to take a call as a founder when you're starting off. Are you getting into the education business? Are you getting into distribution business? I have a simple question all the time that, look, you want to do education, you want to do sales and marketing. And both are equally interesting businesses to build, specifically in this country. But if you build a distribution business, my challenge is if you do not have a product that supports a distribution, it gets very difficult for you to control the customer experience. And therefore, every time you have to acquire a new customer, you cannot just repeat referrals, all those elements just go away. And then it's not education, it's a very transactional business that you work on a distribution for 3 years, 2 years, then the person will go away. But if you're building a product, the person will come back to you.
But I'll tell you what happens, right? So there are a lot of companies that will raise seed funds, 1 million, 2 million, maybe say 3, 4 million. And they spend a lot of that money in just building the product.
That's the problem. Right? I think without distribution, you will never scale. Yeah. So I guess it's as much as wrong answer it is, it's a combination of both.
I think I agree with Mayank. I would over-index on the product. Because in education, if that isn't there, you need to then question that, what are you trying to do? But having said that, I think the real answer, Rajat, is about, think of this as a sort of like an equation which you need to keep on balancing. So it's a dynamic balance equation. So
I love how the teacher and mom's always comes.
So there isn't a linear answer to this, right? Like, first product banayenge, fir distribution karenge. It's, I think, a combination of, like, you know, what he was saying, that you have to start with product. There's no two ways around it. But then product hi banate rahoge, so then you are dead, right? So the smartness lies in understanding that till which level you need to invest in product, and then you need to start the parallel thread on distribution, and then how much to now invest in strengthening the product. So this dynamism is what you need to get right as a founder. It's very different for different industries also, let me also say, right? Even in K-12, it's different for, say, early learning, in tuition and in test prep, it's very different. And I'm sure for this.
In our initial days, for the first 3 years of our journey, 3-4 years, about 70% of our team was just in product, learning, experience, and everything. 30% was in sales and marketing. Today, when I look at, I'm 70-30, the other way around. And that shift has happened. Yeah. But I've noticed one thing that, let's say, I mean, founders' time sometimes is sort of limited. And if you over-index yourself on sales and marketing, you may get growth one or two quarter, but third, fourth quarter, the growth taps out. I mean, caps out completely if you're not innovating on new products, new product lines. And that's something we have witnessed.
Yeah.
And therefore, you have to, as Vamshi said, go in, solve for product, for marketing, and then come back and get the product right so that the next wave of growth can come in. Without innovation and solid execution, you are dead.
Yeah. Actually, it's a function of the evolution of the market also, right? Now that EdTech is reasonably well known, if your product sucks, there's just no chance.
Actually, there's still one thing that I've noticed because of the jump that we need, right? That the products are not very well defined in EdTech. That's a big challenge. And that's what like all of us need to work towards, that the product promise has to be so clear that if you take a flight from Bombay to Delhi, it will take 1 hour 55 minutes and you will, or 1 hour 39 or 35 minutes, and you will land in Delhi. You will not sometimes land in Ahmedabad or land in Bangalore in the process. I do believe that today, if we can get the product promise consistent, it's plus minus 5%, you will get delivered this, you will see a very, very sharp growth in the education.
It's very hard, no? Because
very hard,
it's a people intensive business, right?
It is hard.
Right?
It is hard.
But that is where the whole component of technology comes into play, right? I especially feel in the last 2 years has been more focus has went into sales and marketing, given this phase we are in, and that's natural also. It should have been. But honestly speaking, did all the products scale? I'm sure everyone got at least a 10x jump in their student basis, right? Around that. Where the products like also scaled 10x to kind of match that experience. I mean, I can say for sure, like Vedantu, there are 10 things which probably we still feel that we could have done better, and that's what we need to work on. So I think at this particular time, since we are talking right now, for the companies who have been there, it's really back to the drawing board and like trying to work on what just he said, that the predictability of the experience or outcome. Has to be there. The predictable, there's a massive premium you can charge.
Adoption also will increase. I mean, if you go to a burger shop in Bangalore versus Bandra, it's the same burger. Like, you don't get a different burger. And I know it's people intensive there as well.
Correct.
There are certain aspects of product that Vamshi said that you can divide the entire education stack into certain products, certain services, human interventions are there. How do you bring that predictability is very critical. And the day it happens that I'm not worried that if I reach the airport, it will take me, whether it's a 1 hour delay flight or 3 hour delay flight or on time flight. If that consistency comes in, education will soar.
See, I can't understress that point. It's extremely critical. And also let's understand that we are constantly in competition with offline.
Sure.
It's not just that, okay, two online guys are thing and if both the products are at an 80 percentile, it works. You're constantly competing with the offline thing. You might right now win on price, convenience and that stuff. But at the end of the day, the people are sending to a 30-year-old brand because of that consistency and predictability.
Correct. No, makes sense. I wish we'll have the Indigo or
McDonald's. 100% Indigo will come in education. 100%. I have no doubts about it, but it will take time. I think if you ask today, most of our conversation is on consistency in delivering of outcomes. Like all product conversations are around that. We don't discuss anything else. How to make it seamless, how to make it, you know, but just like deliver me this plus minus 5% and we should be home. There's a variation is quite large because you say education is slightly not a great business to be in because A, first you ask somebody for a lot of money and then you tell them, okay, you paid me a lot of money, but now you give me some time also. Because usually you give money to get convenience, but here you're asking for money and then give me some time. Hey, by the way, you have given me time, now you have to work hard also in this time. So it's a lose-lose business from a customer value prop perspective. And they say, okay, but what do I get in return? Just don't worry. Wait for 2-3 years and you will see. There is some light at the end
of the tunnel. But on that point, right? So there is both of you are in some way promising some outcomes, right? Either in test prep or a job, right? But not everybody gets there, right? So how does that impact the funnel and student psyche, right?
So not everybody gets there, but I mean, so you have to build a model where at least 90% plus people get there. And actually, our perception on higher education, which I want to clarify, is that everybody thinks that people are here for a job. Actually, they are not. Only 30% of people who come to us are coming here for a job or job-related outcome. The remaining 60-70%,
yeah. Outcome is.
So we have to define outcomes and then measure around those outcomes. Yeah. So we have transition, acceleration, career, I mean, professional confidence, and no outcome. We are currently at about 84%, 80 to 85% people find outcomes 6 months post-completion.
Wow.
But still, that's not great, because till I hit 90% is where the real inflection point comes in. Because 85% is still like, okay, there's 15% delta, 1 in 6 are not getting it. But if we get to 1 in 10, 1 in 12, then you are talking real product delivery. So people find outcomes, you just need to know what outcome everybody is looking for. And sometimes, see, right now, what game is everybody playing? They're playing the game that, look, the chances of finding an outcome are higher here versus not being there.
Correct.
Versus playing a game that there is a certain probability, this is the probability of finding an outcome. So right now, we are better than not being there. But we need to get to a situation where there is a guaranteed this much outcome coming in at the end of the program.
Yep, makes sense.
No, so the learning outcome is in K-12 is, I would say, even more, the delta T is lesser because of, obviously, you know, school is there as a kind of like a benchmark or a mirror, and the parents are able to just like whatever you do, if the kid's marks is not improving, I mean, that's the conclusion they draw. So so this is a very deep question, by the way, Rajat. There's a lot of things which a company needs to think and do here. And it's an evolving process. I believe the incentives needs to be aligned first and foremost. I mean, that's the first point. Unfortunately, many models in the market, because of the fact that you are able to collect the money upfront, right? And also some of the cases, the refund policies are like whatever they are. There isn't any incentive to continue giving a great service.
Yeah.
And at a fundamental level in the business, if that incentive is not aligned, then God help you, right? You know, then how are you saying that for the entire duration of 12 months or 24 months or whatever that time frame is, you are incentivized to give consistent, great outcome to the student? It's just a wishful thinking. Then.
Super.
So first and foremost, you need to design your incentives right. Right. That's one. Second, you need to invest in it. So as Mayank said, like learning sciences is itself a deep topic. We have now, after like 4 years or 5 years of work, have reached to this point that we are now able to at least measure the baseline and then able to look at if he's coming for sixth grade, that's or eighth grade math. We have to figure out, first of all, that is his actual level eighth or seventh or ninth, right? And that we are able to do. And then after, and there's a midline and end line. And what we try to do is at an end line, see that has, if he is like a seventh or sixth grade, have we got him to at least the eighth grade, right? So what we try to measure is like how many percentage of students were able to at least improve by one grade level in that duration, greater than that. So current number for Vedanta is somewhere around 68 to 70%, right? Of them have improved greater than one grade level, right? Of with us, right? So there's still way to go, but at least this measurement sort of becomes like a mirror for all the functions, including content, training, and all, to say that this is where it is, and this is what probably is broken or not broken. We have gone a step further. Last year, very proud about this initiative. We institutionalized something called VIP, which is Vedanta Improvement Promise, wherein we said that if you don't improve after spending 1 year, we will give the entire money back, the fee back. So this was a very controversial decision inside the company and a lot of hue and cry. But I felt that this was little extreme, but so I'm not suggesting this, like, and everyone should do that. I hope everyone does that, by the way. But this actually perfectly aligns the incentive. There was no other way to perfectly align the incentive. Put your money where your the main thing is, and then, like, you know, then the finance function is constantly questioning the academic function, which never happens, by the way, right? You know, are you going to do your job or not? So this was an extreme way, but I do believe this whole aspect of learning outcome is not just a question to be asked with edtech companies. It's a question to be asked with the entire industry. And who is taking responsibility, and what are the consequences of you not fulfilling that promise, either as a school or as a college or anyone, right? So I think it's a deep topic, and yeah, a lot of stuff needs to happen on that, but yeah, important nevertheless.
And I guess the beauty is that this 68% in an offline or CNO quota or anywhere else will be much lower.
They don't even know. So the problem is they don't even know.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, higher or lower. Yeah. But the challenge is they don't know and they don't care.
Yeah, they don't care. Makes sense. No, same for even higher ed. I guess outcomes in any offline institute will be much
No, no. I just look at how many people want to get into the double I's of the world and how many get in. And of those, if you look at the latest stat, it's the placement is about 76%. For the double I's in this country, which is like the prestigious institution out there. But having said that, one thing that I also would like to point out that, look, we are in the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th year of EdTech sort of ecosystem. The place where it hits us, let's say our incentives are not aligned and we do a bad job and it just sort of goes through the entire process and we have poor outcomes. Nobody sort of gets the right set of outcome. Our repeats and referrals will not happen.
Sure.
Our CAC will continue to rise. The business in itself will become unprofitable and will collapse. Till how much time you can supply money and plant it. So in some way, as a business model perspective, the investment in this product is seen as a CAC reduction initiative, that if you do this, a CAC will come down because more people will go through. It's just that it takes time to see the results. That's the problem. It's not like eating Maggi, right? 2 minutes and you enjoy the taste. You have to eat the Maggi for 1 year.
Yeah. And just if you keep eating Maggi, then you become like.
And that is what very interesting, Rubang said, that many people are able to hack this. Even if that thing is not working, you're still able to put money, 3 or 4 years, you can like literally show your user growth and nobody would know that the core is broken or not. But unfortunately, when it hits, then hits very bad.
No, we're seeing that already, right? And I don't want to take names, but we're seeing it already.
It's hit very badly.
Yeah. So guys, this has been awesome. Last thing. A lot of listeners would be first-time education entrepreneurs or thinking about starting up. What are one or two areas that you find interesting that haven't been built out and new people can go after?
In education?
Like, they can invest, yeah.
So, I see that there are 3-4 areas, but I think I'm talking about my segment, which is, let's say, higher education, working professional, continuous learning, etc. I think one area that I genuinely feel there's going to be a significant growth and demand is going to be around coaching and mentoring. We are underestimating the power of coaching. I think Vamsi used the word mindset, the fourth element of his sort of learning experience. You can give hard skill, you can give soft skill, you can't give mindset. And mindset happens throughout the journey. And I believe that life coaching, mentoring, as somebody investing 50,000 rupees on insurance will put in 10,000 rupees on their coaching mentoring every year. I do believe that that phenomena will come in. And the second area which I personally am fascinated about is this entire concept of medical education and nursing and talent mobility around that. And there is an opportunity where you can get trained medical professionals looking at international markets. And those two themes I'm personally interested in, both tactical, but those are the things that gets consumed on a day-to-day basis. If you can create a coaching and mentoring business, can I create a medical business?
The second one is not neat prep and all, right?
It's more, No. It's like basically getting your paramedics, nurses. Sure. I mean, India has to become the same level of supplier of that talent as we are in IT. And it's possible from this country.
No, actually, completely. And the second point, I was exactly about to say that. And even in K-12, I do believe that. Right, that whole model of using massive, amazing quality of Indian teachers and becoming a global like supplier of teaching for the like global powerhouse of teachers. And I mean, India is perfectly poised for that. And I do believe it's a matter of time. And a lot of companies have already started to do it. Have done it in the past as well, right? We have stepped back then, like way back. But I would say that the opportunity is real, will become even more so as the cost of the tutoring increases globally. It's really increased. So that's one something which I do believe is very interesting and also has a massive potential of disruption and opportunity. The second thing, in fact, I was just like Mayank was telling me some developments in that area and was very happy to hear that. Online schooling is definitely something which I believe is very interesting and the time has come. Although it has linked complexities attached with it because it is the regulations around it and all that. But if anything COVID has taught, even to these schools, is that why am I restricted to this 10-kilometer or 20-kilometer geography? Mm. And some of the best schools actually are very progressive about this. That's a great area. And that's also an area which, forget about the business model part of it, it will really benefit the the community as well. Yeah. So I mean, yeah, these are the two areas which, I'm probably, would be
looking out. Yeah. And I guess from my side, other than those, probably one area that we are spending some time thinking through is, can you actually work closely with the formal education ecosystem? Augment
integrate,
what's happening, integrate and augment. I think you're doing some of that.
We are doing blended learning with the universities as well.
But that space is just so large and
huge.
I think the opportunity is pretty
there. You can get a immediate indigo of education.
Yes.
Much faster.
Yes.
A 3,000, 4,000 crore revenue company, very fast.
Yes. Okay, let's start. Great. No, thank you guys. This has been phenomenal. Really enjoyed the conversation. And hopefully we'll do some of this more over time.
Sure.
Perfect. Thanks, Ajay.
Good having you.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/matrixmoments. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.